During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest, 50,000 watts. You can also listen on the app, which you can get at 810WHB.com. Jed Marshall is running the show. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Rally House Studios. Just one quick headline. Royals won last night, 4-2. They won two in a row, so they already assured they'll win the series with the Twins. They'll go for the sweep this afternoon. Rudy Salazar will be here at noon for baseball tonight to get you ready. Right now, we're joined by Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com, one of the best in the business. I'll just say it, the best in the business. Dennis, you're the best.
Well, I don't know about that. one just tries, I'll put it that way.
You just try. Just real quick before we get into the college football, are you watching any of the open golf?
Oh, I'm all over it. I'm stuck in front of the TV. Yeah, I absolutely love it.
You have a favorite?
I just think it's more interesting when Tiger's involved. I guess I'm like every American viewer out there that he draws eyeballs. I just think it's fascinating after everything he's been through. And I'm a big Jordan Spieth fan too. So
sure.
I'm fascinated how they adjust their games to the conditions over there, because they have to hit those low screamers. I heard you talking to Howard. That was a good segment.
Oh, thank you very much. Howard's the best. I love Howard. Yeah. He's awesome. Just to update you, I know you're watching, Dennis, but Jordan Spieth and Xander Schauffele both dropped a shot, and Tiger Woods is now one shot back, and Jordan Spieth is in trouble again. So this is going to get really interesting over the next couple of hours.
This is going to – if Tiger wins this thing, this is going to program sports talk radio for a week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. No question about it. We're talking with Howard Richman from CBSSports.com. Before we get too far into the weeds, I was reading an interesting story this morning. Sports gambling obviously jumped into the headlines a couple of months ago when the Supreme Court said that it is now up to the individual states to decide if they want gambling. I don't know how for 20-something years that Las Vegas got this exemption along with, I think, Delaware and one other state. I don't know how that was legal, but the Supreme Court said now it's not. So gambling is coming. We don't know when. In Missouri and Kansas, it'll probably be at least a year because the state legislatures they drag things out, and they have important things to do other than worry about gamblers. But the story I read said that the NCAA said they're still against this. They don't want gambling, and they're doing research on the integrity of the game and how it affects officiating and players and all that. But we have schools already investigating how to make money off this, which we knew they would because money is the bottom line. So Marshall and West Virginia are already looking at ways to get their cut. In addition to that, Rutgers, UConn, and Mizzou have already met with professional leagues to see how they're going to go about getting this, quote, integrity fee, which I'm calling a cut. Have you talked to coaches or administrators about this to see what the feelings are about gambling and how it may affect college sports?
Yeah, I've written extensively on it this summer. I talked to Shane Lyons, who's the AD at West Virginia, and also the chair of, I think, the NCAA Council right now. I'm trying to think. He's a pretty powerful person, a really good dude, by the way. Yeah, West Virginia is the only state where they've come to an agreement, and that's all it is right now. I don't think it's formal. It's an agreement on an integrity fee to give money to Marshall and West Virginia. What an integrity fee is, it's really complicated. It essentially, the people asking for the fee is a percentage of the handle, and the handle is not exactly what is bet, or obviously not what is won, but that point in the middle, the vigorish, if you know what I'm talking about.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and that's where the sports books make their money. So the NCAA, which is not going to do it, by the way, or schools or entities asking for integrity fee, are basically asking these sports books for a percentage of their profit so they can police whatever in this new age of legalized sports gambling, hire new compliance people, And typically, the handle is a very small percentage of what is bet.
It's so, not as much as people think it is.
No, if it's, I saw, you know, initially I think the NBA was asking for 1%. Well, I and I'm no expert, but I was reading that, you know, that the handle is only 5% of what is bet.
Right.
So what, you know, why would any of these sports books give 20% of their profit to the NBA? You know, it's going to be a process.
And that was my thought when I read the story is, you know, casinos and gambling parlors, whatever we want to call them, they're not in the habit of just giving away money. I mean,
no.
They build hotels and golf courses and arenas. They don't give away money. I don't get the incentive because Las Vegas or the gambling industry in total polices all this. If they notice something doesn't look right, they call the federal government. They call the FBI. It's not like, you know, all these games are being fixed. Vegas and the gambling people have done a pretty good job of policing this over the years.
That's a great point. They've gotten, not away, but they've gotten along all these years without an integrity fee. It's in their best interest. That's the way to put it. So just think of a company that wants to keep, I don't know, operating as efficiently as it can. It's in their best interest, all these sports books and casinos and MGM and everything else, if everything is absolutely square. The games, the athletic games, the games within the casinos, they don't want any scandal. That just keeps people away.
Right.
And they've done it over the years. And what you see happening, and I think this is happening in Mississippi, there are some really high-profile companies that, for lack of a better term, manage these sports books. Well, they're the best at it. They just are now branching out to all these states that are looking into it. I think Mississippi's looking at William Hill, which is a company that came from London.
Right. They do a lot of soccer and stuff.
Yeah, 5 years ago, thinking that legalized sports gambling was coming to the U.S. in terms of striking it rich. And they're going to manage the sports books in Mississippi.
Absolutely. We're talking with Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. And that was my thought is, you know, these casinos, if they think you're counting cards, you get kicked out and you get banned. If you have those kids from MIT
right.
who counted cards and won hundreds of thousands on blackjack, they kick you out and you're banned for life. They're, as you said, they're in the business of protecting themselves as well as their clients and customers.
Absolutely. And I think this term, and I'm working on a story about this, the key word here is integrity. Integrity fee, you want to protect the integrity of the sport. What exactly does that mean? I'll tell you what it means. Integrity means that these commissioners and the athletic directors don't want their games to be fixed.
Right.
And there has, in the last 8 decades, going back to the 40s, there's been at least one major scandal in game fixing. One in football, all the rest in basketball, either game fixing or point shaving since the 1940s. That was with everything underground. What does it become now when it's legal? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if it's less. I don't know if it's more. I don't know if it stays the same. But when they talk about integrity, that's what they're talking about. And they're scared to, you know what,
right.
about that happening.
We're talking with Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. Dennis, as we get ready for the college football, I call them training camps. Coaches have different terms for it, but I'll call them training camps. They're about ready to open here and get ready for the season, and your workload is definitely going to increase, if it hasn't already, after the media days and all that with the SEC and the Big 12. But I was reading your list of Power 5 coaches on the hot seat this season, and it's really no surprise that David Beatty, University of Kansas, is at the top of the list. You changed an athletics director. You've only won 3 games in 3 years. You're definitely on the hot seat. I was thinking about this the other day. I don't like it when coaches get fired in the middle of the season. I'm kind of in the Roy Williams line
right.
of thinking on that. I would prefer you let a coach play out the season. But there may come a point this year where if David Beatty is sitting there at 1-6 or 0-7, where KU has to start thinking about who's next. And that could happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, if they're 2-8 late in November or something like that, people have asked me about that. You know, will David Beatty make it through the season? I mean, in one sense, yeah, he deserves to. In another sense, you know, there's the early signing day, and, you know, you've got to get going with the new guy on that. Another sense is you've got to get your new guy before December 20th because that's the first signing day. And you know, how much time do you want to give yourself? I happen to think that no matter what they do, it's not going to be a complete turnaround in recruiting with whoever they get before December 20th. But, I mean, there was a piece of me, when I went to the Jeff Long press conference, there was a piece of me in the back of my mind wanting to ask a question, is David Beatty even going to make it to the season if certain parties were interested in coaching?
Right.
And they sort of answered that question, you know, that he's obviously going to be with the team at kickoff. But if Les Miles all of a sudden made a push for the job, you know, and I'm not saying he will, I think he'd be a great choice. You know, do you keep David Beatty? I'm just throwing that out there.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, and their agents will work behind the scenes and start putting out the feelers. And remember, this is a school that that made it hard for Jim Harbaugh and made it easy for him to turn it down, which was a monumentally embarrassing moment in the history of Kansas athletics. But Jeff Long seems like a sharp enough guy to where he's not going to let something like that happen again. So, continuing on your coaches on the hot seat, two out of the five are out of the Big 12 here. Texas Tech, Cliff Kingsbury. I kind of wonder, and I don't cover Texas Tech on a daily basis. You know, Patrick Mahomes, obviously we have the tie there with the Chiefs. They've also run off some good quarterbacks over the years. Is Cliff Kingsbury, is he getting extra leeway or consideration because he's the young, good-looking guy who does occasionally get some names and makes the scoreboard turn like a gas pump with the numbers running, but they don't win a lot? Is he being given extra leeway because he's a young up-and-comer, and should he be worried?
I think he should be worried. I think the issue with Texas Tech and Cliff Kingsbury is they and he are mind-numbingly mediocre.
Yes.
They're not wild fluctuations. It's 6-6, 7-5, 6-7. They beat Texas late last season, so that gives them a little rope, you know, a little momentum to go into this season. But I had him last year on the hot seat as well, and really nothing to change that. It's been a one-trick pony with the offense. You got to play. I mean, we've seen in the Big 12, you got to play at least average defense to be a championship team. And Oklahoma sort of did that last year with the Georgia meltdown, notwithstanding. But he's 16 and 29
yes,
in the Big 12. I think that's the big thing. You're not competitive. You know, you're only winning 30-year games. A little more than 30-year games in your conference. So, yeah, you can get to a bowl, you can keep things going, but we've seen the ceiling at this place. We've seen Mike Leach average, 8 or 9 wins over a 10-year period. That can be done at Texas Tech.
Absolutely.
It's just not there right now.
We're talking with Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com, who's got, about a billion articles up on their website right now. Going through the Big 12 media days, I thought it was interesting that Oklahoma did not want to quite say yet that Kyler Murray is going to be the starting quarterback down there, and they're the favorite, obviously, to win the conference. But, you know, I was talking with your colleague Ben Kirchival yesterday, and why would a guy like Kyler Murray, who's making, $5 million to play baseball, come back without knowing that he's going to be the starter? And I don't know that he's been guaranteed anything, but it doesn't seem like this is a competition.
It's a competition if you talk to people at Oklahoma. The name of the backup escapes me right now, but he can run the ball. Kyler Murray runs the ball better than Baker Mayfield, so they've got two guys who can run the ball better than Baker Mayfield right now. In one sense, if you're Lincoln Riley, you want to preserve that. If it's a facade of a competition, you're not going to hand the job to a guy who's, you know, who hasn't played a full season yet. So, yeah, you're going to say if he wins the job. I think in the case of Kyler Murray, I really think that he just wanted to play one more season of college football. I think the story with him is the A's. If you're going to reach, which most baseball people think that they did at number 9 for Kyler Murray, because he was a guy projected late first, early second, and you're going to pay him $5 million, and you're going to let him – you're essentially gambling that he doesn't blow out his knee and ruin his career, because that money – I believe that money's guaranteed. I think the agents, if they get it up front, all of it up front, or it's, you know, gone over a period of years, they get it guaranteed. You know, so the kid gets what he wants. Oklahoma gets what it wants. I think it's the A's who are at risk here. So, you know, we'll see.
I totally agree 100%. We're talking with Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. I also thought it was interesting at the Big 12 media days, and I'm going to get to Missouri here in a second as well, I also thought it was interesting that Bill Snyder brought two quarterbacks, Alex Delton and Skylar Thompson. And when I, you know, Bill Snyder was asked about it. Why did you bring both quarterbacks? And, you know, Bill Snyder doesn't have to worry about anything. And here's the thing, and it makes total sense. They're both going to play.
Yeah.
So if they're both going to play and they're both going to be responsible for whether or not you win or lose football games, why not bring them both? I have no problem with it. I thought it was a great move.
When I saw that, Bill Snyder shot to the top of my number one favorite things from media day, the media day talking season.
Right.
Because a guy noted for his secrecy, you know, brought both of his quarterbacks.
Right.
For him.
Nobody else does that.
You know, how we the media always bitch about, but for example, the Pac-12, Stanford isn't bringing Bryce Love. Maybe, certainly their best player, maybe the country's best player.
Right.
He has an academic conflict. Summer school, wants to be a pediatrician, smart, I get that. But that doesn't remove from the fact that, you know, you're looking for attention in Pac-12. You're not bringing your best player. That's another story. But, no, good for Bill. Think of Kansas State quarterbacks as a set of all-weather tires for a cross-country salesman. He's going to get a bunch of set of tires, maybe go through two sets of tires over a year because he put so many miles on them. And this isn't a new revelation.
No.
He runs his quarterbacks until they drop. The next man up is just about the same as the other guy, and that's what he prefers to do. I don't have anything against that. It's just what it is.
And if anybody wants to criticize that, just look at his record. So that's all you got to say.
Right. He's not going to get Drew Locke, you know, a five-star thrower. They just missed on Nick Marshall that year that Georgia got him. Auburn got him, excuse me. That would have made a difference. So he's not going to get always the great thrower, but he is going to get a tough, resilient, smart, decision-making guy who can run some form of the spread.
I'm going to write that down, all-weather tires.
There you go.
So whenever, and I'll credit you fully with it whenever I use it. We're talking with Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, college football right around the corner. I know a lot of fans can't wait, especially here in Kansas City, because there's not a lot of baseball to talk about right now. And I know I think you're a big Cardinals fan.
I am.
If I remember right, and the Cardinals, you know, fired their manager. But this, you know, Matt Carpenter, 6 home runs in 6 games, or more than that, but 6 straight games, and that's a franchise record, which I'm stunned of all the great players who have played for the Cardinals that's never happened before. Just stunned
McGuire
by that.
McGuire did it over 2 seasons.
Okay, yeah.
Like 3-3 or something like that. But Carpenter's the first one to do it in a full season, you know, in season.
All right, final question for you, Dennis. Speaking of winning the media day, Bill Snyder bringing both his quarterbacks. How about Drew Locke? I love the kid. I've covered him since he was, 13 or 14 years old. I think he's a super nice kid. But he's got a little edge to him this year. And he goes down there, and somebody asks him about Tom Herman criticizing his celebration last year in the bowl game where he does the, I don't know if he's putting on the backpack or it's the Superman, whatever it is. But he was asked about the criticism, and Drew Locke just fires back, well, maybe he hasn't seen us play. I did that about 44 times that year.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny. Maybe a little smart-assy, but I thought it was funny.
I thought it was great. He strikes me as a guy, and I've talked to him a bunch this summer because I've got a project going with him. Hopefully, he's going to he's going to let it all hang out his senior year. Whether it's stuff like that, throwing the ball, he's completely bought in with Derek Dooley. Loves his receivers, loves his skill players, and I think that all of that reflects more on a Tom Herman who, as a Texas coach, you know, you have to project a certain image as a Texas coach. Just think of Mack Brown. You don't need to be doing that crap. You know, you don't need to be mocking a player for a gesture he did, knowing that everything you do in public is going to be scrutinized.
Sure, absolutely.
I think it's more of a reflection on Tom Herman. Drew Locke's a college kid.
Yes.
It's not like he pointed to the sideline or you know, did what Baker Mayfield did. He was just doing a thing that the team had come up with,
right,
locking it down or whatever it is.
Just having fun.
Right, exactly.
Hey, Dennis Dodd, I appreciate you taking time with us on this Sunday. I know you got a lot of work to do to get ready for the college football season. I hope you enjoy the open golf for the next couple of hours. I appreciate it.
I will. Thanks, Brad.
All right, thank you. That's Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com, one of my favorite people
to run into either, you know, Big 12 events or press boxes and places. Just a solid guy and maybe the best college writer in the country.
Yeah, really nice guy. Big fan of the show, apparently.
I hope. Yeah, he was listening to Howard Richman. Maybe he was doing his prep to see if I was, you know, if I was doing a good job or something like that.
Well, then he shouldn't tune in, Dad, because we all know that's not the case.
No, but seriously, if you need to go to CBSSports.com and read Dennis Dodd's stuff, because it is all fantastic, and it never ends. There's no off season in college sports, whether it's football or the basketball summer tournaments. It just never ends. There's hirings and firings and on and on, and Dennis is on top of all of that. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. Still to come, Seth Kaiser, at Real MN Chiefs fan, who does video analysis covering the Kansas City Chiefs for The Athletic, is going to join us as we get set for training camp with rookies, quarterbacks, and selected veterans all reporting today to St. Joe, Missouri. So Seth Kaiser coming up in just a couple of minutes. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Patrick Brennan, founder of the Royals Farm Report, Royals Review, and a bunch of websites, is going to join us and talk about some of the Royals' prospects. So all that's still to come. You're listening to Sports Sunday. Jed Marshall is running the show. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Rally House Studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, across the Midwest. Also, listen on the app anywhere, anytime. Get that at 810WHB.com. We are live in the Rally House Studios. Jed Marshall is running the show. My name is Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is here as well. He's getting ready for baseball tonight, which comes up at noon. Royals with a chance to sweep the Minnesota Twins right out of the All-Star break. Updates from the Open at Carnoustie. It's happening, folks. It's happening. Tiger Woods is tied for the lead in the final round at the Open. Xander Schauffele right there with him at 7 under par. Francisco Molinari one shot back, as well as Kevin Kisner, but Kevin Kisner is melting down. Has been. Jordan Spieth had a double bogey just a few minutes ago, so he's now a shot back of Woods and Schauffele. Look at some of the names hanging around. Matt Kuchar is there. Rory McIlroy is three shots back. This is far from over. It's far from over, but it's happening.
Molinari and Tiger, I just noticed a stat that they're the only two players without a bogey today.
Wow. Tiger just...
I had to wait a second to see yes. What happened there.
And Tiger just drained a very tricky par putt. Even if they're short, it was tricky. It was about 8 feet, 9 feet? A little bend, a little curve, a little arc, a little luck, catching the lip of the cup. Tiger Woods tied for the top spot at the Open. Unbelievable.
And he's starting to play like he did back in the day. That sand shot that he had to set up that par
was unbelievable.
Unreal. As soon as he hit it, I just said, wow, that looks pretty good.
We just talked with Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com, talking college football, college sports, a little bit of how college athletics is going to handle the introduction of gambling in certain states, if that goes on. And West Virginia and Marshall have been working on deals to get a cut, to get that integrity fee, which I think it's ridiculous for colleges and pro teams to ask for that, but I guess if you don't ask for it, they're not going to give it to you. And if you ask for it, maybe they will. Another interesting thing, I didn't have time to bring this up with Dennis, but he wrote about this a little while ago. This was a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago, about Brett Bielema. Because with the speculation that David Beatty is going into his final season at the University of Kansas, after winning just three games in 3 years, Brett Bielema's name comes up all the time because Jeff Long, the new director of athletics at Kansas, hired Bielema at Arkansas. Well, Dennis Dodd did a story about Bielema, and maybe Bielema's done with college football. Could be done with college football. He has joined the New England Patriots in a still undefined role. Again, this is Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. Reportedly helped out the Patriots during the Combine and the NFL Draft, which would make sense. Bielma, coaching in the SEC for all these years, would be able to give Bill Belichick and his staff a frontline view, a sideline view of the players they're looking at. Because, I mean, you can tell stuff on tape. You can work guys out. But if you've coached guys or coached against certain guys, you would certainly have a very good idea. But again, it's an undefined role with the Patriots. The Patriots have 97 coaches, whatever it is. So the quote from Bielma on CBSSports.com is, "The thing I love about football in the NFL is you go to work at 6 a.m. and you leave at 9 p.m. and it's nothing but football," Bielma told CBS Sports. "It's just purely football." Also says to look for an announcement soon regarding Bielma, perhaps landing a more permanent role with the Patriots. Pro Football Talk says Bielma will likely have a spot on the defensive side of the ball. Now, coaches all the time, you know, they make these decisions. Oh, maybe I just won't go back to college football. But if there's a school that comes for Brett Bielma, say, pay $5, $6 million a year, which the Patriots are not, I don't imagine. You have to think about it. If KU went to Bielma, if he's on the target list, said, we'll pay you $4, $5 million a year, maybe more, I don't know. You have to think about it.
I don't know if Brett Bielema is necessarily the name you want to hear if
Might
you're Kansas.
Not be.
I think that he's a very good coach. I guess where I sit, though, is that if Jeff Long already hired him once and had to, you know, get rid of him once, or he was fired once.
While walking off the field.
Right. I don't necessarily know if that's the guy who you want. He's a very successful coach. You
yes.
and I, both Big Ten fans, know that Wisconsin was pretty damn good when he was
right.
there. But
three Rose Bowls.
I'm not sure that's the name I want to hear.
Okay. Well, the other name that Dennis Dodd kicked around, and just speculation, this is all it is what we were talking about, whether or not David Beatty may be let go during the course of a season if it's going really wrong, if they're 1-7, 1-8, and it's clearly not going to work and you need to move on. What if a Les Miles started to reach out through his agent or representatives? Les Miles is an older guy. I get it.
I think Les Miles would be a good fit. I don't know necessarily if he'd take the Kansas job. I don't know who would take the Kansas job unless they're getting paid $4 million.
Well, remember, Jim Harbaugh was willing to take the job a few years ago.
Jim Harbaugh is a unique guy,
yes.
And I don't want him to leave the University of Michigan. I think that's a perfect match there, and it suits me fine because I'm a big Michigan football fan.
Right.
So don't take my coach, Brad.
Well, Jim Harbaugh's wife is from Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
so that may have been the tie. And I've seen him around town a handful of times. That may have been the tie, and maybe we all know it would have been a springboard to something else. The Kansas job is. If you're any good at Kansas, you'll get something somewhere else. Right? Am I right on that?
Yeah,
I believe it is. I believe it is.
But if
Les Miles is maybe the other part of that. Maybe Les Miles isn't. I doubt he's looking to go to Penn State or UCLA or.
I don't think either of those two places are going to fire James Franklin. Obviously,
well,
doing
no, I'm just saying
good job.
I'm saying name jobs.
No, I know what you're saying. Les Miles, like you said, is a little bit longer in the tooth. Guys like that worry me because I don't know. It's my university, and I sit there and saw what happened with Charlie Weiss.
You're wondering how much is he really going to be into?
Yeah,
it?
How invested are you
Charlie
really going to be
into anything other than the check?
Steal money.
Yes, I'm here for the check. When I recruit, I'm just going to throw my Super Bowl rings from the Patriots on the table and say that, you know, come to Kansas.
Hey, we got lucky because
got lucky.
I drafted Tom Brady. I didn't draft, but
I mean, you
Tom
asked,
Brady was drafted by the Patriots, and I was just there.
You ask people who had to work on Charlie Weiss's staff how they feel about Charlie Weiss' dedication.
You hear a great guest on our station, Tim Grunhardt,
talk
about his experiences with Charlie.
Right. And I think maybe personally some of those people may like Charlie Weiss, but as far as a head coach and as far as someone to work with or work for, complete disaster. Probably the most unfun staff in America while he was at the University of Kansas. Just miserable every day. And it metastasized. Yeah, so Les Miles would be interesting. I think he would be, from a purely media entertainment standpoint, would be great. He's great in front of a microphone. Now, he's got to win games, but interesting choice. I'm going to have to come to – I'll think about it this week. I'll sit down and write out a list of guys that you could get, that I think you could get. I'm not Jeff Long, but I think we can come up with that. All right, we're coming up on a timeout here. Seth Kaiser, who does video analysis covering the Kansas City Chiefs for The Athletic, is going to join us. Great follow on Twitter, at RealMNChiefsFan. So we'll break down the Chiefs as they're headed to training camp. Rookies, quarterbacks, selected veterans there today. Stephen St. John and Nate Bukaty there as well. Quick timeout. More with Sports Sunday. Jed Marshall's running the show. I'm Brad Porter, live in the Rally House Studios, Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. Inside the Rally House Studios, Jed Marshall is running the show. My name is Brad Porter. Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're now joined by our good friend Seth Kaiser, at RealMN Chiefs fan, because he lives in Minnesota. Seth, how are you doing this weekend?
I'm doing really, really well, man. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you got beautiful weather here in the Midwest, and I understand up in Minnesota you got some great weather too, and it's also convenient that the Chiefs are going to open training camp this week. The rookies are reporting today. The public cannot go yet until later in the week, but you never want to be practicing football when it's 102.
Right, right. That sounds. You never want to be doing anything when it's 102.
No, not at all. So as you've been working on your video breakdowns all summer since you moved to the Athletic, which is all fantastic stuff, since you've been working on that, is there any excitement level for you with training camp opening, or is it just back to the video and breaking it down for us?
You know, there's a lot of excitement. It's kind of an in-between time for me until the first preseason game, because on one hand, people aren't going to be that fired up to see film reviews from a year ago.
Right.
But on the other hand, there's not video to break down from training camp. And so it's a little bit of an in-between time. So I'm going to focus on a few things like talking about Tyreek Hill and so his potential role for this year, just stuff like that. I'm really excited for training camp, though, and I'm hoping on making it down for a couple of days.
Well, the only way you would be able to break down video of training camp is if Sammy Watkins went wild again and started posting videos from Chiefs practice before they got taken down. Because when you go to training camp, or really any Chiefs practice, they let TV guys, and when I worked in TV, they'd let you shoot about 5 or 6 minutes of stretching, and then if the wide receiver group is doing those jog things, catching it over their shoulder with one hand, you get that.
Right.
But as soon as it's actually time to play, you got to turn the cameras off. So no video for you, Seth.
Yeah. Well, what's hilarious to me? Well, what'll be fun is if I attend as a member of the public. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I don't
film
know.
Everything.
I mean, members of the public can video stuff.
Absolutely.
But what's hilarious to me is that teams have these public practices, but they're still, even while these practices are public during like the 7-on-7, 11-on-11, they're still very picky about video. Which I find that hilarious, because it's like you think teams didn't know that you're going to run a Mills concept, you know, or like these these very basic football concepts. Like, you think they're not going to see that wide receiver screen coming that you've used for the last 5 years,
right?
But you know, that's how the NFL is. They that high level of secrecy.
Well, and if you want to do something, and I thought about this the other day because Nick Foles was on TV. I think he won an award from ESPN. I don't watch the ESPYs, but I think he won an award for something. And they showed the play from the Super Bowl where he lined up out wide as kind of he's a decoy, and then he catches the touchdown. Okay, I get that if you want to hide that play. Fine, hide it in private later, but your basic stuff, I totally get you. And look, Seth, I've fought this battle for years, and we're not winning. Teams are not going to let us shoot more.
Right. That's just how they do it, for sure.
So as you're breaking down videos, I was looking at your stuff over the last couple of weeks, and the Reggie Ragland one, was that the last one?
That's the most recent article.
Okay.
Yep, and then we've got part two of the perfect marriage with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, so let's talk about Reggie Ragland, because the Patrick Mahomes stuff we're going to get to, I promise, because you cannot do a Chiefs segment without talking about Patrick Mahomes the second. But the Reggie Ragland one I was really interested in, because I thought he was good last year. I didn't think he was great, but I thought he was good.
Right.
I thought he was good, and he was coming off an injury, and he'd come from another organization, and he was a really high draft pick, and he played at Alabama. Lots to like there. So when you looked at the video,
of Reggie Ragland. Does it confirm my thoughts or my eyeball test that he actually was good? Was he maybe better? Was he not as good as I think?
Well, I don't think it would surprise anyone that he was pretty good against the run. Very good at times. There were certain games, like the one against Buffalo, where he was clearly there was some extra motivation. I mean, he dominated that game as, in terms of run defense. Had a lot of great snaps there. And he had a lot of really good run defense snaps that maybe went unnoticed in some games where, you know, you fill a gap and you redirect the runner, but someone else gets the tackle. We tend to not notice that in real time because it just happens so fast. But he had a lot of plays like that. He's a solid run defender. What surprised me reviewing his film was how often he was in coverage. It was more than I would have thought. They actually dropped him back into zone coverage anywhere between 10 to 15 times a game, at least. And he actually looks pretty comfortable there. I don't think he's ever going to be a man coverage backer.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets depth on his zones. He's very aware of receivers coming in and out of where he's going. And that's really all you need when you're talking about an inside linebacker. And so what really impressed me is when you understand the context of his situation, you know, to the Chiefs late August. And so pretty much when training camp's about done, it's right before the season, it's after defensive install, and everything's been done. And additionally, he was coming off an ACL tear. And additionally, he's a second-year player who lost his whole first year to injury, so he's effectively a rookie because he couldn't practice last year either. And so when you take all that into context, the fact that he played well down the stretch is really, really impressive. And so to me, it seems like a portent of good things to come for him.
We're talking with Seth Kaiser, who covers the Chiefs and does video analysis for The Athletic website. Fantastic site, by the way. Subscriptions are pretty. You can find discounts for it all. That. What is it, $3 a month? It's ridiculous, and you can find discounts. If you need something beyond that, you can find the discounts. We're talking about Reggie Ragland. So when you talked about dropping into coverage 10 to 15 times a game, we know when the Justin Houston talk in the offseason was, well, they didn't use him right. They dropped him into coverage too many times. But for Reggie Ragland, 10 to 15 times, not being asked to do too much, is that about the right number for him? Are they using him to his strengths?
Well, with him, you know, because obviously he's not an edge rusher, and so you want him to be able to drop back in coverage because that provides you with options. For years now, the Chiefs have, on obvious passing downs, they've often kept DJ in, but they've removed every other linebacker because they had guys who couldn't cover, who would get exposed in on obvious passing downs. And, you know, the ideal, honestly, is if you can get away with having linebackers on the field on those passing downs, it helps you stay stronger against the run. The real problem for the run defense over the course of the last two or three years, until last year where it was just bad all the way around,
right,
was that teams would just spread them out and exploit those looks with only one linebacker. Because unless it's Eric Berry back there, a safety just can't do the same job.
Right.
Now, Berry can, but he's unique. And so I like the fact that he's comfortable dropping into the zones. And then my understanding, now it's that time of year where everyone's in the best shape of their life.
right.
But my understanding is he purposefully dropped 10 pounds, which I think, you know, if he can just get a shade quicker with that, I think that would help him a great deal in that area as well. So I was encouraged by that because we already knew he was a thumper. We know he hits hard. We know he tackles well. But it's nice to see him be able to get out there in space too.
And I'll be excited to see, you know, his second year and being back fully healthy, Justin Houston perhaps playing a different role. And as you said, we talked to you a couple of weeks ago, Justin Houston was a lot better last year than most people think. And you showed your wife the video and we went through all that. And then bringing in Anthony Hitchens. I'm really excited to see how that group comes together.
I am too. It's you know, it's tough because, like, on the surface, if you're just looking at names, and this is conversations that I've had with people that are a little more, they don't follow the Chiefs very closely. They'll say things like, oh, man, you lost Tom Bahali and Derek Johnson. Yeah, it's tough. Well, the problem is, and look, these are two of my all-time favorite players.
Everybody's favorites, yeah.
The problem is last year they were minus players.
Right.
They just DJ got better as the year went along, but he just didn't have it. When people saw Antonio Gates just outrunning him on a crosser for a touchdown, you realize he just didn't have it anymore. And the more film you watch, the more you see how problematic it was.
And Antonio's, Gates has been beaten up his entire career. And you're right, if he's outrunning you, then there's an issue.
Yes. Yes. And so seeing Hitchens, I think Hitchens is going to be a big upgrade over what DJ was last year. I don't think he's a great linebacker, but I think he's a good one. And I think Ragland, especially with a year in the system, he started to play well down the stretch, and it did help the run defense. The problem for us is with recency bias, we only remember the last memory. So our last memory of the run defense is the disaster against Tennessee.
Yeah, not a good one.
Which, one thing worth noting, the two biggest runs Tennessee had that day, a 35-yarder and a 29-yarder, Ragland wasn't on the field for either of those. And so those are the little things. That's why you watch the film, right? Because people are like, well, if he's so good, why'd they have these big runs? Like, well, because he was on the sideline.
Right. That's why we need the video analysis from you.
Right. And so I'm hopeful with this group. I think it'll be an improvement over what we had last year.
Absolutely. We're talking with Seth Kaiser, at RealMN Chiefs fan on Twitter. It's a great follow, and he does video analysis for The Athletic, all about the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, Seth, we do have to talk about Patrick Mahomes II because this town is on its ear waiting to see him as the starter, and I think training camp is going to be packed this year. I think it's going to be more packed than it ever has been since the return to St. Joe. So your latest piece, the perfect marriage between Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes II. First of all, I chuckled a little bit because I know you're a minister. I'm assuming you perform weddings and marriages?
That's part of it that comes with the job.
Okay, so I just laughed because I'm like, well, he's actually a minister and he's writing about a perfect marriage, so why not? So in part two, kind of tell us what you dove into and your thoughts.
Sure. So part two, the idea is the narrative around Mahomes right now is that, you know, he's a first-year starter, he's only a second-year player, he's going to take quite a few lumps, it's going to take a while to get adjusted to the league, and then also, well, because he's kind of a gunslinger, he's going to throw all these picks. And, you know, in the first part, I talked about how I think Patrick Mahomes is the perfect quarterback to adjust for Andy Reid's weaknesses. The second part is the reverse of it, and that's hence the perfect marriage. You know, that's where your strengths and weaknesses kind of coincide to where you can kind of be stronger together than you would be apart. And what I point out with Mahomes, and where especially with Andy Reid's offense, is that he creates more easy opportunities for quarterbacks than pretty much any other head coach or offensive coordinator. He does, like, I mean, you're talking half the throws every game are one read throws where everything's very meticulously planned out to get an easy throw or an easy read. And that should help Mahomes adjust quickly because he's not going to be asked to, you know, he's like, oh, he's not going to know how to read a defense. If you go back, and this is what I provided demonstrations of, and you watch what Alex Smith was doing, Alex Smith, you know, a decade veteran, there are tons of snaps where he's not reading the whole field. He's just reading one or two defenders for whatever kind of, whether it's a read pass or run pass option or whether it's just a levels concept on one side of the field. It's all about just reading a few players. It makes it simpler. And they already did that for Alex, and so you know they're going to see some of that with Mahomes too. And that means this whole, he's not going to know how to read an entire defense. For one thing, whether that's true or not, and I don't know if it is. Even if it's true, he doesn't have to for the majority of the snaps. And then as far as the gunslinger tendencies go, it's the same thing. When you've got a very regimented offense, if things are going right, Mahomes doesn't have to be a gunslinger. And so when things are going right, you've got your couple of reads there, reading one side of the field. It's very tightly controlled, and the guy will be open, and Mahomes will throw it to him. The gunslinger thing will come in handy when things go wrong.
Right.
So the idea of the perfect marriage is that, well, Andy Reid's very tightly controlled offense should help control Mahomes' gunslinger tendencies when he shouldn't be a gunslinger. But when things go wrong, because sometimes, you know, Reed's not going to win all the time. He's not always going to call the right play. It's not always going to be perfect. The idea is when the offense isn't clicking and things aren't going right, that's where you need the gunslinger to kind of drag them to a couple of first downs until things start clicking again. And so in the perfect world, if things go like I think they will and how they should, they'll complement each other very, very well with their greatest strength offsetting the other guy's greatest weakness.
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that Andy Reid has a gift for simplifying things for the quarterbacks. Not simplifying the offense, but making
the areas of the field where you need to read or the defenders you have to read simpler. I'm glad you bring that up because I think Alex Smith is walking into a whole different world with Jay Gruden in Washington, and I got a feeling he's not going to be happy with some of the things he sees. But I'm sure he'll be fine. He's a veteran. He knows what he's doing. But I'm glad you said that about Mahomes and Andy Reid both. So those would be two things to watch in training camp. One, when he runs the simpler looks and things for Coach Reid, and two, when he decides to chuck it. And believe me, the first time Patrick Mahomes throws it 50 yards at training camp, all of St. Joseph is going to erupt.
Oh, absolutely they will. And the first pick that he throws, and he's going to throw them, especially during training camp when they're trying out new looks and all that kind of stuff, people are going to freak out. I know there was one day of organized team activities where he threw two interceptions, and there was like a story on Pro Football Talk about it, and you got to ask yourself, what are we doing?
Yes, like, exactly.
He could throw a touchdown every throw in training camp, and it wouldn't need that big a deal. And he could throw a pick every throw in training camp.
Right.
It wouldn't be that big a deal. Of course, that won't stop me from attending and freaking out either way.
Right. Well, I saw the same thing. I think Jeff Rosen had, like the first rookie OTA 4 or 5 weeks ago, the writer who covers the team, wow, he did not look good. He got picked off three times. I'm like, he just got here. Give the man a chance to break. It's like spring training.
Settle down a little bit.
When
it's
we go to spring,
be okay.
Yeah, well, like when we go to spring training to cover the Royals, there'll be somebody will give up three home runs in a game, and it'll be, oh, my God, that was awful. And I'm like, well, he didn't throw any fastballs. Why didn't he throw any fastballs? He's working on his curveball today, and if they hit it out, they hit it out. That's all he's working on. So, hey, Seth, I know you got to run. I know you're busy. I said this before, and I'll say it again. You are our favorite lawyer, minister, Chiefs video analyst for The Athletic that we know. So,
and I can tell you mean that. I appreciate
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely. And by the way, I enjoyed you on with Josh Briscoe earlier in the week. You guys have great conversations, too. So thank you.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
All right, that is Seth Kaiser. Does video analysis on the Kansas City Chiefs for The Athletic. Check him out on Twitter, @RealMNChiefsFan, or get that subscription to The Athletic and read it there. Or if you have it, go and read it now. So we'll take a quick timeout. We'll be back with more Sports Sunday. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.